All right, in our next class in the Midrash, is the major question is, who were Bilha and Zilpah? And it's a fascinating topic, simply because we don't know anything about them. We know very little about them, I should say. What we know is that that when Yaakov marries Leah, and then a week later he marries Rachel, the Lavan gives Bilha to Rachel, and he gives Zilpah to Leah. We know that after Leah has her four sons, her first four sons, and Rachel finds that she's infertile, that she gives Bilha to Yaakov, and then Zilpah sees that she's Vatamo Biletus, she also is not having any more children, so she gives Zilpah to Yaakov. And the only other thing we, you know, and then they each have two sons, and the only other thing we really hear about them is really about Bilha, is the story with Reuven and the bed. And even that is an interesting discussion, which I think we might look into in our next class, because I know we're scheduled to talk about the Dudaim. I don't remember if we're going to talk about the Bilha episode. I have to see what I put together in my research. I don't remember. Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at Bilha and Zilpah. We're going to look at some psukim, but we're mostly going to be looking at this through the lens of the Midrash. And the last page, which I gave you here, is something which I found to be a fascinating question, and that is the question of Bilha and Zilpah being included in the count of the imahos, right? The mothers. Remember the song of Pesach, right? Four are the mothers, and three are the fathers, and two are the luchos. So what do you mean, four are the mothers? So we always say the four of the mothers are Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, right? Which makes sense, because if the Avos are Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so it's their wives. But hold on a second. Yaakov has 12 sons. They're all the Shiftei Ka, right? They're all the Shvatim. They're all the tribes. So where do those 12 sons come from? Four women, not just Rachel and Leah. So who are Bilha and Zilpah? Are they chopped liver? I mean, their sons aren't chopped liver, so why are they chopped liver? So I found a number of sources that actually refer to the Sheish Imahos, and that's what we're going to be looking at, the six mothers. Okay, so we'll go through that at the end. All right, so who are Bilha and Zilpah? So the psukim that I gave you, I'll explain to you the context when we get up to each of them. There's a list of psukim at the top of the second page, but we'll start with this one. Okay, if you remember, towards the end of Parshas Vayetze, that Yaakov basically runs away, right, with his family, and Laban chases after him, and then they have this whole crazy fight, and then they settle the fight with Galeed. They make a pile of rocks, and they say, "Look, you're on one side." They basically, Galeed is like a line in the sand. This is my side. This is your side. Nobody's crossing over to the other side anymore. So, and in the context of that conversation, we have this pasuk. Parak Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Nun, 31:50 in Breishis. Im Te'anez B'nosai, B'im Tikach, Nashim Al B'nosai, Ein Ish Imanu Re'ei, Elohim Eid Bein Yivanecha. If you're going to mistreat my daughters or take new wives in addition to my daughters, you're basically saying, good luck to you. Elohim Eid Bein Yivanecha means God's a witness between me and you. Good luck, right? I'm gonna do something about it. That's essentially what he's saying. So what does Rashi say there? Why does it say B'nosai twice? Remember, B'nosai means my daughters. So, im ta'anes b'nosai, v'im tikach nashim al b'nosai, Rashi says, shtei pe'amim, because af Bilha v'Zilpah b'nosai v'hayu v'pi lagash. That the reality was that Bilha and Zilpah were also Lavan's daughters, just from a different woman. Now, it's an interesting question, how were Rachel and Leah from the same mother? Okay, we don't know. And you can ask that question in those days, obviously. Were Rachel and Leah from the same mother? Some say they were twins. Some say, you know, but again, there are theories, but we don't really know. Okay, so but this first idea that's being suggested is that Bilha and Zilpah were in fact daughters of Lavan. So if we need to identify them, then the first thing we can say about them is that Lavan had a concubine, and from that concubine, Lavan had Bilha and Zilpah. Okay, and this idea is supported by, you know, by certainly the next source. By the Midrash Sechel Tov in 29 says, "Vayken Lavan es Zilpah Shivchasa b'tomi pilaksho leleah b'tomi shivcha shtei omedes l'fanam b'sharsa osa." That basically Zilpah he's identifying as a Lavan's daughter from a pilagish. Okay, now I don't know why I didn't put whether Bilha is also mentioned by the Midrash Sechel Tov there, but okay, let's take a look at the next one. Im Taneh, sorry, Lashon Anava es Nashai. Okay, Nashai. Yaakov says, Taneh es Nashai. I'm sorry, Tana es Nashai. Tana means to give. Right, when Yaakov wants to leave, he says to Lavan, give me my wives. In other words, I need permission from you to leave. Why does he need permission to leave? Because who's Nashai? Es Bila v'Zilpa shenasnu l'nashim. He's also asking for Bilha and Zilpa, right, permission for them to go, because they are his wives. And who else? Es Yiladai, my sons, Elu Abanim Kulan, and Asher Avadati Oscha Bahein, and the ones that I worked for you, from, you know, I worked for you in order to get them, Elu Rachel Valeya. Okay, Rachel and Leah are the ones that I work for. So I don't really need permission, but I'm just defining each one. Right, Bilha and Zilpa, they're your daughters, fine. How did I get them to be my wives? Not because of you. You gave them to Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah each said, take my maid, who is my half-sister, with a different mother from a concubine, but I didn't earn them per se. They were given to me. But I'm a respectful guy, and I'm asking for permission, because in the end of the day, they are your daughters. They are your daughters. Okay? So again, this is a strand which is running through the Midrash, that's who Bilha and Zilpa are. Take a look at the Yalkut Shimoni, okay? Lakach Lavan shtei shifchosav v'nasan l'shtei brosav, that Lavan took his two maids and gave them to his daughters. And so the Yalkut Shimoni asks, hold on a second, v'chi shifchosav are you? Were they his maids v'halo b'nosav are you? They were his daughters, meaning Bilha and Zilpa were his daughters. What do you mean they're his maids? Ella benimus haaretz benosav shel adam pilakshav hein nigra osh vachos shenemar v'tein lavan l'rachel bito. Okay, he says that he's essentially saying that the way that we translate the word shivcha is not really correct, right? Shivcha, you know, it's like nowadays when you call somebody who is even nowadays they don't even do this anymore, right? But once upon a time, if a child was born out of wedlock, we would say the bastard child. Okay? Now again, it's not the kid's fault, but it's a label. It's a label. So the Yalkut Shimoni is saying that the product of a man with his concubine is called a shifcha. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean that she's a maid? No, she's his shifcha. That's what it is. She's not his full daughter, because the mother of the children is a pilegish, is a concubine. So instead of being a daughter, right, nowadays you might call a stepdaughter, right? I don't think you call anybody a half daughter. It's a half sibling, but a stepdaughter or something like that, or a whatever. I mean, Thomas Jefferson had children from his slaves, right? So what do you call them? They had names for them, right? You called them a mulatto. Okay, I'm not saying it's a nice term, but that was a terminology. Okay, it's a child. Okay, but in a culture, if you have a label for a child who's a product of a relationship which is not standard, then that's what the label is, or that's what the label was. And so that's what shivcha is. Okay? And again, the Yalkut Shimoni is doubling down on the idea that Bilha and Zilpa, that their father was Lavan. Okay, now that's one view. There's another view. Okay, let's take a look at the Bereshis Rabati in Parshas Vayetze, page 119. Okay, in the interest of time, I'm just gonna read the English. Were they his maids? Weren't they also his daughters? It was because daughters of concubines were called maids. And some say their father was actually the brother of Devorah, Rivka's nurse, and his name was Achoti. Okay? Now, once you look at can you imagine the guy's name was Achoti? What does Achoti mean? My sister, right? But if the guy's name is Achoti, right, it's like, who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third. It throws you. Before he got married, he was in prison. Lavan had redeemed him and given him his maid as a wife. He had a daughter named Zilpa, named after the city where he'd been held captive, and another daughter named Bilha, who had a tough time learning to nurse. Right, ma behula biti, right? What kind of behula, trouble you have, my daughter? V'kasher halach Yaakov etzel lovet. So in other words, Zilpah's and Bilhah's names are based in a play on words. Okay, and by the way, it's not just Bilhah and Zilpah where you find this in the Midrash. You find this about a lot of people in the Torah. And it opens the door and really begs the question of whether the name, some of the names given in the Torah, were their real names, or were they like nicknames that came upon them later? Were they inspired by something else? Moshe, for example, is named because he's drawn out of the water. But you think his parents didn't name him? Right? There's a Midrash which gives like 10 names given to Moshe. Avigdor and Tuvia and a whole bunch of other stuff. But the name which he has is Moshe because he was... Because you mean Amayim Mishisiu. Okay, whatever that means, I've seen amazing interpretations, which I don't remember right now, about what Moshe means in the grammar and the conjugation, which really makes you wonder whether the daughter of Paro was some kind of University of Bar-Ilan linguist in Hebrew, because Mishisiu is Hebrew and Moshe is presumably Hebrew, and if it's really Mishisiu, then his name should be Mashui and not Moshe. And what does Moshe mean? Moshe means is the one who actually draws, right? So that's based in a prophecy that he's going to be the one who's going to draw the people out of Egypt. Anyway, it's a whole different story. But
then it was an Egyptian name, Moshe.
No. Probably Moses is more like Ramses. Like, in other words, the names which end with a ses. So his name would be Masus or Moses or something like that. But Moshe is based on Hebrew. I mean, Kimin Amayim Mishisihu Moshe. That's Hebrew. So what was his Egyptian name? That's what I'm saying. She was a professor at Bar Ilan University. Maybe the Hebrew University. Even better. Okay, I don't know. Okay. So, but we have this with a number of people in the Torah and certainly in Tanakh. I mean, Kalev ben Yefuna. Yefuna wasn't his father's name. His father's name was Chetzron. So why is he called Yefuna? Pina atzmo miatzas miraglim. He was able to turn himself or escape from the plot of the miraglim. Another one was
Yisro.
Yisro has a bunch of names. What does each one mean? Yehoshua ben Nun is Hoshea ben Nun. What's his real name? Is it Hoshea? Is it Yehoshua? Yehoshua ko Yoshiacha, God should save you, because there wasn't really a Yud, but Hoshea means to save. And there are other names like that as well. When we look in Divrei Yamim, for example, you find that Miriam is referred to as Ephrat. I don't remember the explanation why, but that's the name which is given there, and it's clear that it's her. So, anyway, but that's where the name is Bilhah and Zilpah. We're going to see more stuff about the names Bilhah and Zilpah. Okay. So now we just to summarize page one, we have two differences of opinion, that either they were the daughters of Lavan or they were the daughters of a guy named Achoti, and that's what brought them into Yaakov's family, because their father was the brother of Devorah, who was Rivka's nurse. Okay, and again, what does that mean? Rivka is called Menekes, Devorah rather is called Menekes Rivka. Okay? So, Devorah must have had some kind of relation to Rivka's family. And while I'm not an expert in what it takes to be a Menekes or a Shivka or an Eved in a time, I imagine, based on a little bit we know about history and about, and even if you want to look in times when things are not so nefarious and evil in terms of slavery, but think about like a butler who's in a family for generations, right? What does that mean? It means that there is a deep connection. This is the butler family, and this is the balabatim. This is the balabas. So presumably, the Devorah's family, whatever they were the servants of Besuel and Lavan's family, and that is the suggestion which is raised in this context by the Bereshit Rabbati. Okay, so we move on to understand a little bit more about Bilhah and Zilpah and their relationship with Yaakov and the family. Okay, and the first pasuk which we have on the top page 2 is the one which I shared with you before, which is Tinas Nashai B'Yasiladai. I'm sorry, not the one which I shared with you, but the one which we saw quoted in the Midrash Sechel Tov, where Yaakov says to Lavan when he wants to leave, he says, "Give me my wives, my sons, and Sharavadati Oscha Bahain, and the ones I work for, and I will go. Okay, so it sounds like, right, Yaakov is not saying Tanos Nashai via Shifchosai, right? He's not asking for his Shifchas, he's asking for his wives, right? Nashai means women, but it also means wives. So if Yaakov is asking for his wives, how does he view Bilhah and Zilpah? Right, presumably as wives. I mean, I can't imagine that he's saying, give me my sons, but the mothers of, Gad, Asher, Dan, and Naphtali, I don't need them. Okay, he's asking for all of his women, and all of his women are his wives. Okay, and look at when Yaakov does leave, Yaakov, Vayisa, as Banav, Vyas Nashav, Hagmalim. It doesn't say anything about Yaakov lifting and putting onto the camels his sons, his wives, and his maids. Right? They're Nashav, they are his wives. Now, we have a problem. And the problem is, the next pasuk, right? When they cross over Mavar Yabok, Vayakam Balaila, who? And he gets up in that night, Vayikach Eshte Nashav, Eshte Shifchosav, V'yasacharas or Yiladav, V'yavoras Ma'avar Yabok. That he takes his two wives and his two shfachos. What are we going to do with that? So, I mean, if we follow the interpretation that we saw in the Midrash, that shfachos just, refers to who they are, because they were the daughters of the concubine of Lavan, so maybe that's an answer. But if not, the question is, who is describing them as shifchos? Okay, as shifchosav. Is it Yaakov's perception? Is it the Torah's perception? Is it the narrator, for example, so to speak, of the Torah? So, I don't know.
Even with that, there's an inconsistency that is not answered by any of that. Because in the previous sentence, or the previous
source,
it says, yes, Nasha, without any further correct elaboration. And then a couple of psukim later, you have them delineated, some as Nasha and some as Shifchosav. It seems like it's inconsistent in the sense that initially...
What do you mean? What do you mean they're delineated as...
Well,
meaning
you
the,
break them down in the second citation. Mm-hmm. You don't break them down in the first.
Right. So then it just begs the question of, what does the word nashav mean? Right? Does nashav mean wives, or does it mean women?
Okay, but it still seems to include the pilakshim, say, or the...
I don't want to call them pilakshim. I don't want to call them pilakshim at all.
Okay, so call them maids. It doesn't matter. In the first sentence, it seems to include all of the women.
Right.
And in the second, it's not good enough to say nashav.
Right. So I'm wondering, and this is just a half thought that I have, that maybe because of the particular context, right, that what Yaakov is facing in Pasuk Lambeis, meaning if you look at Perek Lambeis, if you look at the first two sources, Perek Lamed Pasuk Chav, Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Zayin, right, both of those are in the context of, where is Yaakov still? He's at Lavan's house. Okay, Lavan knows the score. Lavan knows Bilhah and Zilpah pretty well, pretty intimately, perhaps, right? Especially if they're his daughters. Right? He knows them. In Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, where is Yaakov? It's already Parshas Vayishlach, and Yaakov is on the cusp of meeting Esav. And there's that uncertainty of what's going to happen when he meets Esav. And will Esav view Rachel and Leah versus Bilhah and Zilpah differently, on account of just, there is a difference in relationship. Meaning, I don't know, for example, I don't know, after the birth of Asher, that's Zilpah's second son, and after the birth of Naphtali, that's Bilhah's second son, whether Yaakov had a sexual relationship with Bilhah and Zilpah anymore. Meaning, where did he get his intimacy from? Did he just, did he hang out with Rachel all the time? I don't know. I mean, obviously we know that Leah had Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dina after the births of Gad and Asher and Dan and Naphtali. Okay, fine. So we know that Yaakov spent time with Leah. We know, obviously, Rachel dies, and, you know, so after Rachel is out of the equation, Rachel's out of the equation. So presumably Yaakov spends time with Leah, but we don't know. We just don't know what Yaakov's, you know, relationship with Bilha and Zilpah was. We just don't know. Yeah?
One other question. Since we had this problem before in the case of Sarah and Hagar, Sarah allows Abraham to have relations with Hagar, but doesn't release her from servitude.
Right.
In this case, are we absolutely clear as to whether or not Rachel and Leah released their servants?
No, I don't think we are.
Maybe that's why, maybe a little bit inconsistently, we see subsequent references to Shavkosa.
Right, so, but I don't think we see subsequent, we see one reference. I don't believe there's another one.
I think we have it at the beginning when we were talking about Yosef, at the beginning, B'nai something. In that first sentence.
All right, I'd have to look. I didn't take a chumash out today, but we in Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yagbez Ve'el Tadot Yaakov Yosef Ben Shva Asre Shana Yoro Esachav Atzavu Naas B'nei Bilhav Es B'nei Zilpah Neshei Aviv.
Neshei.
Yeah. Neshei Aviv. It's actually right there. Sorry. It's the last pasuk. Okay, we're going to see.
Okay,
the next pasuk is in also in Parshas Vayishlach, and that is a different story, and That's the Reuven Bilha incident, and Vayihi Bishkon Yisrael Baratz Ahi Vayelach Reuven Vayishkav Es Bilha Pilegesh Aviv. Okay, now this is the only time that Bilha is referred to as a Pilegesh. Pilegesh is a concubine, and why is she called that? And I don't think it's because of anything other than Reuven's perception. Okay, and there are a lot of interpretations as to what the word Pilegesh means and why this word is being used. But I don't think that this is... See how it says Pilegesh Aviv? Right? In other words, it's the way Reuven perceives because, she's only my father's Pilegesh. Only my father's concubine. Hey, Reuven, that's in your mind. You know, just because your father didn't marry her the same way that he married your mother and the same way that he married Rachel doesn't mean that he perceives her as a Pilegesh. You might perceive it that way. You may justify whatever you're doing. And again, whatever Reuven does is a huge debate. I mean, some of the commentaries I've seen on that, especially in the Parsha class given the last couple of years, was amazing. Amazing stuff. But I don't want to get lost in that now. But the point is that Pilegesh here, her being depicted this way, I believe, is in Reuven's mind more than anything else. It's not the way that Yaakov perceives her. And then finally, like Jerry said before, who in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, when Yosef is described as hanging out more with the sons of Bilha and Zilpah, look at how they're defined. B'nei Bilha v'es B'nei Zilpah. Neshei Aviv. Okay, so we do have a question on Shnei Shivchosav. Okay, but again, in light of the insight regarding Reuven's perception of Pilegesh, maybe in the context of being concerned with how Esav is going to perceive them, maybe the Torah throws like a small switcheroo on us and says, you know what, Esav might view these as wives and these as shifchos, and he might treat them all differently if indeed he comes along to, you know, who knows what, right? The whole Esav episode, Yaakov doesn't know what Esav is planning. Yep.
Maybe it's Reuven's perceptions entirely, because we're talking about what Reuven did or didn't do. By Yishkav is Bilha Belegesh of it.
Right.
So maybe it's entirely Reuven's perspective.
No, I believe that pasuk is. The Bilha Pilegesh Aviv is Reuven's perspective. I was just trying to address the Shivchosav. I said, in light of the insight regarding Reuven and calling her Pilegesh, that because it's in the context of we're about to face Esav, so how's Esav going to perceive this?
Okay.
But maybe he wanted to split them off also.
It could be. Again, we have a question. You know, I'm trying to give an answer. I don't know that it's the greatest answer, and maybe there's a better answer. But I think that, you know, in most of these cases, what you clearly see is that they are referred to as Neshei Aviv, right? Or Neshei Yaakov, Nashav, Tanaz Nashai. Okay, they are So now again, if you want to define nashim as women, fine, then that's an easy answer. Then they can sometimes be a pilegish, they can sometimes be a shivcha, fine. But if we define nashim to be wives, 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 100%, me'achuz, no question asked, these are his wives, okay? Then, of course, then that opens the door to the question that I started with regarding page 3, which is why do we only have 4 mothers and not 6 mothers? And I don't think it's a nice suggestion to make that the 4 mothers are Rachel, Leah, Bilha, and Zilpah, right? I mean, we're getting rid of Sarah and Rivka. I don't know that we can do that. Okay, so if we're going to refer to 4 mothers, then, I mean, certainly there were 4 mothers of the 12 tribes, right? I mean, that's agreed, but we're not going to eliminate Sarah and Rivka that quickly. Okay, so we have the Pesikta, Breish Islami, Dibur Maska, Vatera Le'ah. Okay, Vatera Le'ah, Kiyom Demi Ladis, Vatikach, Zilpah, Shivcha, Savitena, Sali, Yaakov, Le'isha. Right, the Pasuk says that Leah gives Zilpah to Yaakov, Le'isha. Isha does mean woman, but Isha means wife, right? Wife. And that's what the Midrash says. Le'isha v'lo le'pilegesh. Ela shicharosa v'derach isha z'kacha. She freed her and he took her in a manner of her leg of the marriage. So based on that, to answer your question before, whatever Sarah did with Hagar was maybe a model just to give your husband another wife, but Hagar's role, you're right, didn't change. This is suggesting that Zilpah's role did change. Did change. Okay? All right. And presumably, in that same, I don't want to jump the gun on the Psikta, but presumably that same thought would apply to Rachel giving Bilha to Yaakov. Okay. So, look, we've seen a lot of things, as I've been saying from the very outset with the Midrash course, the different inconsistencies, I guess we can say, in the Midrash, don't always lead us to a definitive answer, but they are meant to open our mind to at least questioning or trying to come to a conclusion of some sort as to what the reality is. Okay, the next two little sections are just meant to tie up a couple of loose ends, not so much to give us more information about Bilha and Zilpah, but just to add a little more about who they are or how they came to their names. So, for example, the Midrash Sechel Tov, Perek Lamed, Dibur Maskil Zayin, Vayar V'Hinei, says a little bit about their names, Bilha and Zilpah. And look at how they're named. Bilha, Zilpah, Masa, Agviros, and Kruos. They're based on the deeds of their mistresses. Bilha, Al Shema Balhus. Bilha, based on suffering. V'domelo le'es erav v'hinei Bilha. Right, the Shayahu 17:14 uses the same exact letters, Beis Lamed Hey Hey. I'm not sure how that word is pronounced there, but which means she saw the pain and suffering of her mistress, who Kiyosam Itzaris Umizbahelas Alakiros Givirta, that she saw the pain and suffering of her mistress who was childless, and that is what the word suffering comes from, and that's why she's given that name. Now, what does that mean? So you have to remember, it's like anything. I mentioned Yehoshua before. When is Yehoshua given the name Yehoshua? The Torah tells us it's at the story of the Meraglim. The story of the Meraglim is in Parsha Shlach. But in the entire Torah up until then, he's always referred to as Yehoshua. Because when the Torah is written down, right, things are named Al Shem Sofon. You have that also with like locations, for example. Okay? Peleg, that's a person, right? What does the pasuk say about Peleg? His name was Peleg. Why? Ki bi'amav niflaga ha'aretz. Because in Peleg's time, you had the Dor HaPalaga, that's the Tower of Bavel. Right, so at his bris, they said, Mikareshimo Peleg, because there's going to be a Tower of Bavel. Really? Okay, I mean, is that how it works? Right, Noach. Zeh yinachameinu, right? He's going to give us comfort, and so his name is Noach? Noach doesn't mean comfort. Noach means rest. Noach means, right? Noach, if you turn it around, Noach matzah chein v'enei Hashem. Right? Noach found chein. Noach and chein, it's the exact same letters. He just flipped around. But why was his name Noach? Was he really named Noach in his bris? I mean, they say he was born circumcised, so maybe he never had a bris. Okay, but,
Maybe in a enlightened spirit from God?
Of course. But the point is that sometimes names are given to people based on, in the Torah or in Tanakh even, based on something that happened later. And so they're given this name going back. I mean, you know, so there's what to be said. So Bilhah, was that her name when she was given to Yaakov? Or did they start calling her Bilhah when she's watching 4 years of Rachel infertility and she's just, I mean, she's dying inside over what Rachel's going through? I mean, that's what this midrash is suggesting. Zilpah, Shagam hi, a name is Alphos Demos, Al Shahaisa Gavirta Amura La Esav. Zilpah, her eyes were also weakened. Again, plain words, Mizalaphos Demos, because her mistress was to marry Esav. So what does that mean? What do you mean her mistress was to marry Esav? I mean, that makes no sense.
It was sad.
No, but when did Zilpah become Leah's Shifcha?
After she had already
married. After she's already married Yaakov, right? So what does this even mean? So in other words, Leah had this concern that you have to look at the names that Leah is given, that Leah gives rather to her kids. Right, Ra Hashem be'onyi atoye evani ishi. Right, God has seen my suffering. Shema Hashem ki sinua nochi. Shimon is because God hears I am hated. Levi apam yileve ishi elai. Maybe now my husband will accompany me. Yehuda apam odes Hashem because I gave birth to four sons. I'm going to give thanks to God. Okay, that Leah for her entire marriage was always worried that Yaakov was going to get rid of her, and this is something which really pain Zilpah, is what the Midrash here is saying, that Leah was living in that kind of fear. And we just look at the Dudaim story, when Reuben finds those flowers and brings them back, and what does Leah say to Rachel? You stole my husband, I should give you the flowers, now you want the flowers? And Rachel's like, take your husband, you know, I mean, I don't have that, you know, it is what it is. But look at Leah's perception. My husband's not with me anymore. My husband hangs out with you all the time. So I'm never going to have any children. Boom. So she has Yaakov and then she has children. Okay. All right. Is that where their names come from? I don't know. Right? I mean, look at Shifra and Pua. What does Rashi say about Shifra and Pua? That their names weren't really Shifra and Pua. Their names were based on what they did. So, you know, we look at it and we say, who are they? Are they really Miriam and Yocheved? Are they? There's another approach. It's Yocheved and Elisheva, or daughter-in-law. In either case, it's really impossible, right? I mean, just think about it. If you look at the age of the people involved, right? I mean, I don't like to think that Shifra and Pua are Miriam and Yocheved. Yocheved, maybe. Miriam, I don't know.
Could be Egyptians.
Right, yeah. Mialdos Ivrios could be Mialdos Esa Ivrios, correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. And just a few fun midrashic facts. This is more about Zilpah. Okay, who was Zilpah? So I look at this midrash and I'm reminded every now and then you read some crazy story in a news article. I just saw one a few weeks ago about this girl who didn't even know she was pregnant and gave birth. Okay, she was a teenager, skinny as anything. And there are some women like this where they just, their pregnancy, so you have two sides. You have women who are exceedingly large, whose pregnancy you can't tell because they just have, you know, a bigger belly. And there are some women who are so tiny that their baby just doesn't take up any space. It's bizarre how it works this way. And so, or whatever, there's something, obviously it's the baby's not in a vacuum, but visibly, you can't tell that they're pregnant. Now, how a girl doesn't realize that she's pregnant because she's not menstruating, I don't, you know, I couldn't for the life of me understand, unless she's extremely naive, clearly extremely naive, because she didn't realize that if you do that with a guy, you're going to become pregnant. Okay, but anyway, so you read this about Zilpah, and I can understand this in light of some of the things that you hear nowadays. Zilpah, the maid of Leah, gave birth. By all of them, it says, in other words, by all the wives, it says that she became pregnant. Vatahar, she became pregnant. And here it just says, Vatelet, that she gave birth. It doesn't mention a pregnancy. Ela Bachura Haisa, she was a younger maiden. Veloisa Nikaras Bibura, and her, the Torah doesn't notice her pregnancy because nobody noticed her pregnancy. Okay, which I just found to be fascinating. Her pregnant, right? And the Midrash Agada says a similar kind of thing. Zilpah was younger, should have been Rachel's maid, but she was given to Leah as part of the Laban's trickery to prove the first wife was Rachel. How do we know she was younger? Because it only says she gave birth, no mention of pregnancy. She was the younger maid and her pregnancy was not noticeable. Okay, again, it's just a fun midrashic fact. It doesn't, or, you know, I'll use the word fact in quotes, because, you know, we don't really know, but the midrash is coming to answer a question. How come the pregnancy is not noted in the Torah? What was this? We don't believe for half a second that this is an immaculate conception. She was pregnant. She gave birth to a child. And even if you want to make the argument that Yisachar, and Zvul, I think it's an easier argument, to make that Zvulun and Dina were twins, because it says after the birth of Zvulun, it says V'achar nol dabas. And afterwards, she gave birth to a Zvulun was born, and then she gave birth to a daughter, right? So it's a much easier sell and argument that Zvulun and Dina were twins than Yisachar and Zvulun, you know, being twins, or that Yisachar, Zvulun, and Dina were triplets. I believe that Yisachar and Zvulun were different pregnancies, but insofar as all of the prior to the births of all the children, there's a mention of a pregnancy, which you don't find with Zilpah, and so the Midrash is trying to answer that problem. Okay, so hopefully we got a little bit of a picture of Bilhah and Zilpah, perhaps of their parentage, whether it's Lavan or this guy Achoti, and of course the relationship and the perception. I believe that Yaakov viewed them as wives, and I like to think that the reference to Pilegesh is certainly Reuven's perception. And the reference to Shivcha is probably on account of Esav coming along. Okay, because Esav, when he first got married, the Torah tells us he had two wives. And then later on, when he hears that his father doesn't approve of the daughters of Canaan, he married the daughter of Yishmael. That happens at the end of Parsha as Toldos. So maybe Esav would assume that, of course, Yaakov would marry two wives. That makes sense. But anything else which he have, because the marriage which he has is on his parents' approval, right? They said, go marry Lavan's daughter or daughters. So fine. So two, right? That's pretty standard. That's what you're supposed to do. Grandpa Abraham did that. Our father didn't, but, you know, different story. Okay, but Esav did it. Yaakov, you do it. But who are these other ladies? It doesn't seem to be, you know, they don't look like Leah and Rachel. They don't. They just look a little different. I mean, they may have the same DNA, or they may not have the same DNA, but they're coming from a different place. Okay, and that leads us to our last source, and I'm not going to, you know, go too much into this. All of these come in the context of trying to teach a deeper story or a deeper lesson, usually about the number six. Okay, about the number six. And once they're talking about the number six, they throw in there, for example, six imahos. But let's take a look at the first source here, Targum Yonatan. So I gave you the Targum Yonatan, which is in Aramaic. I gave you the Keter Yonatan, which is a Hebrew translation of the Targum Yonatan. And I gave you my translation of Targum Yonatan in English. Moshe put his hand on the sea using his great and glorious stick, which had been created at the very beginning. God's special name was engraved on it, as were the 10 letters indicating the plagues and the three fathers and the six mothers and the 12 tribes. From his hand, God caused the sea to split with an easterly wind and the water split in 12 compartments. Okay, so what's he saying? That what is engraved on this stick? How many mothers?
Six.
Six mothers. Okay, and it doesn't seem like you can translate the word shesh to be arba. Hey, clearly wrote shesh. Shesh means six. Shis imhasa means six. Okay, take a look at the Bamidbar Rabbah 12 by Aviv es Karbanam. So once it talks about the bringing of the karbanos of the Nesiim, of the princes, it talks about shesh eglos tzav, right? Six calves. And what are these calves? Why six? Sheish kineged sheish is mebereshis, right? The 6 days of creation. Six following the six orders of the Mishnah. Six following kineged imahos, the six mothers. And who are the six mothers? Just to clarify, Elohim, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah. Okay, so there you have it. That's what the way the Bamidbar Rabbah presents it. And he gives other examples about six mitzvahs that a king is instructed in, and six six steps up to the chair. Which chair? The chair of Shlomo, maybe the chair of God as well. Okay, and the similar kind of idea is shared in Shir HaShirim, Rabba Vav Beis, where in addition to some of the things which we've already seen, you're going to see like the Mishnah, 6 days of creation towards the end, the six Imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Zilpah, Bilhah. Okay, there were a few others prior to that, but just wanted you to see that they are all mentioned in this context. It is interesting that with the exception of the Keter Yonatan, all the other sources which I have here, after it tells us about the Sheish Imahos, it lists all of them. Okay, I don't know why it does that. I mean, I would think that it would be obvious once you're saying Sheish Imahos, but maybe you just wanted to be clear that we're talking about the four that you all know, plus Bilhah and Zilpah. Okay? And again, I did not want to come to a particular conclusion regarding whether there are six mothers or four mothers. I just wanted to show you that there are people who clearly were aware that you should not be shirking Bilhah and Zilpah of an earned title. If they are the mothers of Gad, Asher, or Dan, and Naphtali, that's a third of the Shvatim, right, altogether between the two of them. So they should be given the appropriate title as one of each of them being one of the Imahos of the Jewish people. Okay, now we don't, because we don't know anything about where they're buried, for example, we know where Rachel is buried. Okay, we know where Rachel was buried. We don't know where Rachel is buried. Leah, we have a much better idea where she's buried, although the signs in Maras Machpelah were probably not put up by Yaakov Avinu or by the 12 sons when they buried Yaakov. You know, this is Abraham, you can put it over here, and we're going to build a nice little thing over it, and a little Beis HaKnesses, so we'll call it Beis HaKnesses of Abraham Avinu, and here's Yitzchak, and here's a nice little courtyard for the Muslims, and here's, that wasn't built in those times. But so because we don't know anything about the death of Bilhah and Zilpah, we don't know anything about where they're buried, so they don't get the same limelight that Rachel Mavaka Albaneha, and Leah, Shama Kavarti is Leah, and Yaakov wants to be buried next to Leah, Maris Machpelah. So Bilhah and Zilpah don't get that same press time. But I think it's important to give them the credit that they deserve, and the credit that they deserve is to be counted as the mothers of the Jewish people, right, four of the tribes. So between the different things which we've seen, whether it's their lineage which comes from Lavan directly or from a family associated with Lavan, their relationship to Leah and Rachel, which we didn't really get into that much, because they're just so quiet. I don't know if they were quiet, but in the Torah they're pretty quiet. But we get an understanding and an appreciation that Yaakov certainly valued them as Nashim, and therefore we should value them as Yaakov's wives. I don't think we should fall into the trap of calling them Shvachos or Pilegesh, because it seems pretty clear to me that there are answers to those words and to those questions about an inconsistency. Yaakov viewed them as wives. Leah, and by the way, unlike Sarah, who didn't really view Hagar as a wife, he said, take my, Ibaneh Anochimen. What did Sarah say? That if Hagar has a child, whose child is it going to be? Mine. Now Rachel does that too, but like you said, the pasuk as b'nei Bilhah as b'nei Zilpah. Nobody says b'nei Bilhah and b'nei Zilpah. Nobody later says that they're really the sons of Rachel and Leah. Nobody says that. They're the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, and they are nishei aviv, the wives of Yaakov's father, the wives of Yosef's father. Okay, and that's who they are. So hopefully, we have a little bit more of an overview of Bilhah and Zilpah through the lens of the midrash, and that was the goal of today's class. Women who are deserving to be called the Imahos of
Israel.
Could it
be that the four sons of Bilhah and Zilpah were elevated to be Shvatim because of Yaakov?
Of course.
And therefore, they had, even though they're Shvatim, Bilhah and Zilpah still have a different status as opposed to Rachel and Leah.
It could be. I like to think, as I said, that it's more because we just don't know anything about, we don't see them. We don't even see them get buried.
Right.
So, we don't see Rivka get buried either. But by the way, you can say, you can ask the opposite question. Rivka had Esav, right? If Sarah, wanted to view Yishmael as her own son in her own way, well, clearly she rejected him once Yitzchak was born. So, I don't know, but we see that Hagar is nowhere. And Yitzchak only had Rivka, so it's not like you could say, oh, well, half of Rivka, you're no good because of Esav. That's not the case. But I don't know how you can reject them so quickly. You know, you can ask questions. I don't see how they could be rejected.
Do we know where the other Shvatim were buried?
No, it's a fascinating question. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, we showed in the shul a film called Patterns of Evidence. Patterns of Evidence was I forget the name of the fellow who did it. He actually just is coming out with another Patterns of Evidence kind of movie, which is just trying to understand some Bible story, trying to understand it, and from the perspective of archaeology and whatever things have been discovered. So the point is that in that film, one of the things that they discovered was a place in Egypt that had 12 little huts that were burial grounds, and they were trying to make the argument this is where Yosef and his brothers were all buried because they did not look, they looked like Semitic rather than Egyptian. And so, you know, that they were all empty by the time the archaeologists came. And they said, but why were they empty?
The tomb of Yosef and
no, Yosef's bones were taken out by Moshe. But where were they in the interim, from the time that he died until they left?
Yeah.
And that was the question. And that's one of the things which they addressed in there.
I think Yosef was in the water or something.
Right, no, so there are a lot of interpretations as to where Yosef was in the meantime. Vayisem ba'aron b'mitzrayim doesn't mean Vayisem ba'aron Benilus, right? So, anyway, interesting stuff. Okay, thank you guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.